Welcome to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. I'm Sarah of the blog Sarah's Bookshelves. Each week, I'm talking with one bookish guest about two old books they love, two new books they love, one book they don't love, and one new release they're excited about. We're going to get real and sometimes a bit snarky about all things books. If you like the show, I'd really love your support. Spread the word to your reader friends, subscribe to the show, rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts, or get bonus podcast episodes by supporting the podcast on Patreon. There's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio to my Patreon page. Let's get rolling. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the first episode of Sarah's Bookshelves Live for 2020. It's been a minute since I talked to y'all, so I'm thrilled to be back. Before we get to today's episode, I do have a quick announcement, and I hope that it's a fun one for y'all. I'm introducing a new element for Sarah's Bookshelves Live $5 a month patrons. This will most likely be around mid-month that I'll release these. I will be releasing a bonus episode of me doing the book recommendation segment of the regular show. So once a month, I'll share two old books I loved, two new books I loved, one book I did not love, and one upcoming release that I'm excited about. And these will be solo episodes. That means no co-host. So it's just me talking about the books that I loved or didn't like and why I loved or didn't like them. And I'm really looking forward to having a venue to share the books that I love and don't love outside of just kind of piping in when I happen to have read something that one of my guests is sharing. So if you'd like to get access to these bonus episodes, as well as monthly superlatives episodes featuring every full-length episode guest picks for five bookish superlatives categories, you can subscribe on Patreon for $5 a month. And there's a link in the show notes and also in my Instagram bio. All right, let's get on to the episode. This week, Catherine from the blog Gilmore Guide to Books and I are doing our winter 2020 book preview. Catherine is my regular co-host for these quarterly book preview episodes, and we're highlighting the books we're excited about that are coming out between January and March of 2020. And y'all have said in either my Facebook group or via Instagram stories that these previews are one of your favorite types of episodes, so I was really glad to hear that. Welcome back, Catherine.
Thank you. I am so happy to be here. It feels like it's been a year since we've talked.
It does feel like a really long time because I think we recorded the fall preview episode back in August. Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah. As usual, we're going to start by sharing our success rates from our fall 2019 preview episode. And I'm so excited, y'all. There's actually some good news to share this time around. We'd had a pretty low successful books percentage rate in the first couple of our preview episodes, but I'm happy to say that that is going up. So yeah, you can trust us even more now.
That's right.
My success rate for the fall episode was 78%. I liked 7 out of 9 books that I shared. That is way better than any other preview episode we've done.
That's massive.
I know. I feel like the only place to go is down from here. But 78% is high. I mean, that's tough to beat. So
that is. That's a great number.
Give me some leeway if next time around I'm not quite there yet. Catherine, what was your successful percentage?
I didn't have the trajectory that you did because, yeah, that's pretty astonishing. I'm kind of slow and steady. My summer success rate was 63%, and for fall, I ticked up a little bit to 67%. So that's all right. I'll take it.
Close to 70% strong, though.
Yeah, I'm happy.
All right. And we're also going to share our best and worst books from the fall preview episode. My best, I have two. They are The Other's Gold by Elizabeth Ames. And that was a debut novel that I know was a little bit divisive, but I loved it. It was 5 stars for me. And that was a friendship novel, campus setting, glittering writing, stuff I love. And then the other one was The Dutch House by Ann Patchett. She's one of my all-time favorite authors. This was a dysfunctional family novel, and I know that probably most of you all have heard of this one. It's been on a lot of bloggers and bookstagrammers' best books of 2019 lists. What were your favorites?
Well, I just had one from my fall picks, and that was Tuesday Mooney Talks to Ghosts by Kate Reculia. But I have to just say, it wasn't my best fall reading. And I don't know about you, but for me, the big books of fall, all the ones with the hype, actually played out.
I agree.
The Testaments.
Oh, well, not that one for me.
City of Girls, Daisy Jones, and The Starless Sea were all absolutely outstanding for me. So Tuesday Mooney was great. It was quirky. It was exactly what I needed at the time. I just was surprised that so many other of my fall reading books were equally exciting.
So way to go, publishers, for typing the correct books.
That's right. Much, much appreciated.
Yes. So my worst pick, and this was really disappointing for me because I was really looking forward to this book, was The Great Pretender by Susanna Cahalan. And she wrote Brain on Fire, which was a memoir. And a lot of people really loved that book. And I really loved that book. It was also nonfiction about the mental health industry. It was really dry and really dense and kind of read like a textbook. I ended up DNFing it maybe a quarter in. I will be talking more about this book on an upcoming episode because one of my guests shares it.
Oh, okay.
That'll be coming in later in the month.
Okay.
So tell me about your worst book.
My worst pick was Amy Waldman's A Door in the Earth. And everything on paper made this book look like a surefire winner for me, but none of it came together. I couldn't relate to the main character or her situation. She didn't feel real. Like things didn't mesh, her decisions and her motivations and then what she actually did. So that combined with too much plot left me cold, which was really disappointing, kind of like The Great Pretender for you. Waldman's debut, The Submissions, I absolutely loved it. So yeah, this one was pretty disappointing.
Sophomore slump.
Yes.
All right. So moving on to 2020, Catherine and I each picked 9 books coming out between January and March. So you'll get a total of 18 recommendations today. We are not holding ourselves to a specific number of books per month because we wanted to leave ourselves open to choose the books we are most excited about for winter overall without feeling like we have to fill a certain number of monthly slots. And we did this for our fall preview, and judging by our numbers, it seemed to work. And unless otherwise noted, we have not read these books. We are just looking forward to them. But I actually have read 4 of the books I'm going to share today. So I will tell you which ones they are as we get into them. Y'all, judging by the 2020 books I've read so far, it is going to be a fantastic year for reading. I mean, the books I've read so far have virtually adored all of them. And
wow.
My lowest rating was 4 stars, and that was only one of them was 4 stars.
That's huge.
All January releases, too. So January is going to be a big month.
Okay.
On that note, I will share my first book, which actually is not coming out in January. This one is already out. It came out December 31st, which is such a strange publication date that I just kind of lumped it into the 2020 preview.
That is very bizarre.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen that. I don't know why a publisher would choose that date.
I don't either. I think the original publication date was January 7th and it was pushed back, but I don't know why anyone would release a book on New Year's Eve. And the book is Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reed, again, coming out New Year's Eve. And it's literary fiction, but I thought it read a little bit more like commercial fiction. And it is a debut novel by an author of color. The premise is Emira Tucker, who is a young Black woman, is confronted by a high-end grocery store security guard who suspects that she has kidnapped the white toddler that she is babysitting. The story kicks off from there, and it centers around Emira's relationship with Alex, her white boss. And Alex is a woman, by the way. And Emira's white boyfriend, Kelly, who's a man. That's an interesting name swap there that I just noticed for the first time.
Yeah.
Anyway, a lot of people have read this one. You've probably seen it on Bookstagram a fair amount. Annie Jones rated it 5 stars. Liberty Hardy liked it. There's tons of general buzz about this one. I'd heard it was a 5-star book about race and privilege and class, so I was really expecting it to blow me out of the water. And I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. But it was only 4 stars for me, and that only probably wouldn't be there had the buzz been a little bit more tempered. So a lot of expectations going in that if I hadn't had, I would have finished the book and been like, I really like that one, rather than I really liked that one. It's only 4 stars.
Was there anything in particular that hung you up? Because I just finished it. So I'm curious insofar as what you can say.
Yeah. Okay. So it's tough to say everything that I thought because of, I don't want to spoil things, but right. It did read more like brain candy than I expected than a profound book about race and class and privilege.
Agreed.
But I didn't mind that. A more readable, quote unquote, issue book is the kind of issue book I want to read. If I'm going to read an issue book, I want it to be a really good story also. I don't want to just have it be important, if you know what I mean.
Right. For me, I won't even name names. There were characters that were deeply problematic.
Oh, yeah.
For me.
And I think that might have been the point, but also I was annoyed by it.
But, right. It skewed a little too hard. It pressed the point.
Yep.
They almost veered into, oh, come on. This person is insane.
That's the exact word I have in my notes. Insane.
I thought it was very interesting in all the ways it played with race and privilege, but ultimately there were just things that didn't work quite as well for me.
So I thought this book really took off in the second half. There's a pivotal scene in the novel that I adored. And it's super awkward in a hilarious way. And yes. You'll know it when you read the book. So for me, this I really tore through the second half. On the flip side, when the book ended, I thought, what am I supposed to take from this book? Because I know I'm supposed to take a profound message, as many other reviewers have said. But my immediate reaction was, oh my gosh, these people are insane. And this poor girl was a pawn in their twisted game.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great story, a good read, but I didn't find it super profound. And then I went back and wrote my little mini review, which I haven't posted on my blog yet, but it will be coming soon. And I looked through the quotes that I highlighted, and especially some about race and privilege. And she did really have some very profound points, but they got a little bit lost to me amidst all the craziness. Does that make sense?
I agree. It's exactly how I felt about it.
And I love craziness in a book. Don't get me wrong. But these
well,
characters were just, and I actually don't mind dislikable characters either, but for some reason, these I did kind of mind.
No, I agree.
They were a little bit of a caricature, I feel like.
Yes.
But it would make a great book club pick. Fantastic book club pick.
Yes, lots to talk about.
And y'all, I feel like I've sounded a little bit negative when I've shared this, but like, again, 4 stars for me. I really liked this book.
That's huge.
Yeah, that's what I want you to take away from it.
Definitely.
All right, what's your first book?
My first book is Topics of Conversation by Miranda Popke. And it's either going to be a triumph or a tragedy if it isn't done well. It's a debut novel about women, feminism, motherhood, and every messy emotion that comes with all those things. It spans 20 years in contemporary history, so there are going to be a lot of cultural milestones throughout the novel, and also probably a fair amount of female anger, something I've yet to get tired of reading in my fiction and nonfiction. But the narrator is unnamed, which can get tricky sometimes in reading a novel, but given where she is in life, could still work really well. She could feel very relatable, which is what I'm hoping. It's being billed as similar to Department of Speculation, which I think you didn't like, did you?
I was ambivalent about it. I really loved certain sentences and paragraphs and ideas that were in Department of Speculation, but I had trouble getting into the story because it is kind of a strange structure. It's not really a story. It's almost like snippets.
Yes.
I just had trouble falling into the narrative of it.
Okay. Well, I loved it. And so they're not hyping it, but when they mention this is similar, it also kind of piques my interest.
And I think that will pique a lot of people's interest. I think a lot of people did really love Department of Speculation.
Yes. And that's coming out January 7th.
Awesome. All right. My next book is a book y'all have probably heard of already, So sorry about that. But I loved it so much that I wanted to share it anyway. It's called Long Bright River by Liz Moore. And it came out yesterday. So you can get your hands on this one. It was a December Book of the Month pick. And Ashley Spivey, who was on the podcast a long while ago, she was the judge that recommended this book for Book of the Month.
Ah.
It's a literary mystery. That's what I'm calling it, at least. Some other people might be calling it a thriller, but I don't think it feels too much like a thriller. It is the story of two Philadelphia sisters, Casey, who is an opioid addict, and she lives mostly on the streets, and Mickey, a cop who her assigned cop beat is the neighborhood where Casey generally lives and hangs out. So that dynamic in and of itself is really interesting. I rated this one 4.5 stars. I loved it. It's really long. It's over 500 pages or almost 500 pages, which is long for me, but I flew through it. You really don't feel the length. So don't let that deter you if you're somebody who's nervous about really long books. My one thing that irks me about this, and it's not about the book itself, it's about the marketing. It has been marketed as the next girl on the train. I mean, really?
Ooh.
Like, are we not finished with this by now?
Good Lord.
Yeah. And it was blurbed by Paula Hawkins. Great. But that doesn't mean you need to slap the next girl on the train label on it. And just forget about that right now, because this is not similar to the girl on the train. It feels like a literary police procedural. And there's also some character-driven family drama thrown into the background. And I'd say it feels much more like a mystery than a thriller. And it kind of reminded me of Miracle Creek, of A Nearly Normal Family, in that it's that literary mystery slash police procedural slash courtroom drama subgenre that I'm finding that I really like these days. And it does take a really hard look at opioid addiction, but also she treats it really compassionately. And I think it would make a great fiction slash nonfiction pairing with Dope Sick by Beth Macy.
Gosh, yeah, I read that this fall. Holy cow.
Yeah. And again, you'll hear more about Long Bright River on an upcoming mini episode where a guest shares it. All right, Catherine, tell us about your next book.
Marie Benedict has become a go-to author for me in a very, very specific genre. I'm going to call it historical fiction about the accomplishments of women who have been overshadowed by the men in their lives. How's that?
That's an awesome subgenre. And I like that subgenre too.
Do you? Yeah. She is wonderful at it. Her debut, The Other Einstein, was about Mileva Einstein, Albert Einstein's wife. And it was fascinating. Her new novel is Lady Clementine and is about Winston Churchill's wife. And given that he's the face of World War II fortitude, I'm very curious to see her impact in his life and his work. And just as importantly, I'm hoping this will also be about her life pre and post Winston. I think it will, because she's very good at writing about women in their own right, in their own accomplishments. And she always manages to unearth something that goes beyond the limited surface treatment women in history have gotten. So I'm really excited about this. It's Lady Clementine by Marie Benedict.
And does she normally write from the wife's first person perspective, or is she telling the story about the wife from like a third person perspective?
Good question. Her last book was about Carnegie, and that was a maid. She does it from their perspective, but then she does also pull back and go to the third person, you know, kind of omniscient. But it is largely told from the woman's perspective.
Okay. So my next book is the book I'm most excited to tell you about, because it is the book that I've seen the least about over on Instagram. And I just finished reading it. It's 5 stars for me. I absolutely adored it. Totally took me by surprise. It's called We Wish You Luck by Caroline Zanken, coming out January 14th. So that will be next week. And it's literary fiction. So the premise is two MFA students, and that is Master of Fine Arts, like creative writing graduate programs, if anyone just didn't know what that meant. So two MFA students plot revenge against their star professor, who is also a published author. When she destroys, and I'm not going to define exactly what destroys means because that's part of the surprise, when she destroys one of their dear friends. So Susie from Novel Visits read this book and rated it 4 stars. That's where I first heard about it. It only has 10 reviews up on Goodreads, but they're all really good reviews. So I don't know why this is not getting the attention that I feel like it deserves, but I'm going to give it some attention. It's a campus novel, which y'all know I love, and the writing is the star of the show. It is out of this world. When I say the writing is the star of the show, I don't want that to be telling you this is a quiet book, because it's not really. There are definitely massive plot drivers, for sure. But also, her commentary about the social hierarchy of the students is perfection. And her introductions of each new character, and there are a lot of characters because this is like an MFA class, right? So there's a fair number of people in the class. But she makes you able to remember each character because of the way that she introduces them. Within just a few paragraphs, I felt like I knew the psyche of each of these people. And I think that's really hard to do. And she did it beautifully. And there's this fun sense of foreboding the whole way through the book. You just know that something's going to explode and you don't know exactly how it's going to happen, but it's definitely going to happen. And it is an interesting structure. It's told from a collective perspective. Like the narrator is the class of students, minus the three main characters who are Hannah, Leslie, and Jimmy. And I think this collective perspective really adds kind of a gossipy feel to it. It enables them to speculate about people's motives that you don't ever have their direct perspective about. So some of the fun is what's left unsaid. And it's the kind of writing that you want to savor. You don't want to fly through this one really quickly. And I don't want that to come across like a bad thing. I normally have trouble with books like that where I feel like I have to concentrate on the writing, but I did not with this one. And I did have to reread some sentences every now and then to make sure I really got what she was trying to say. But I don't want that to be a negative in this case. And it reminded me a bit of The Other's Gold. I would say that the outrageous plot points are not, that's not a thing in We Wish You Luck.
Okay. Well, between that and you saying that it's the kind of writing you want to slow down for, I love that. I mean, that is a real plus to me.
And then the other book it reminded me of was The Ensemble by Asia Gable.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And mostly because of the kind of simmering on the edge of combustion dynamics between all these people.
That sounds great.
It was great. I absolutely loved it. And again, that is We Wish You Luck by Caroline Zanken coming out next week. Definitely get your hands on it. What's your next book, Catherine?
We spoke about Department of Speculation.
I was going to say, wow, this is quite a transition.
I know. We spoke about Department of Speculation earlier, and you said you appreciated some of her writing. That author is back. Jenny Ophill has a new book coming out in February called Weather. And for what I can tell, it's going to be another hit for me. One, the main character is a librarian. Her name is Lizzie, and she's dealing with a very needy mother, an addict brother, in addition to her own life with her husband and her son. But when an old friend who has a popular, I think you'd call it trend casting podcast, where, you know, she talks about contemporary issues and where she sees things going, and she's very often right, this friend asks Lizzie to help answer all the mail the show gets, and suddenly finds herself answering some of the most polarizing questions we have right now on subjects like climate change, social justice, racism. She's just completely out of her depth, but she manages it until all of these plates I've just talked about come crashing down. The book is only 200 pages long. It's got a lot crammed into a little, which kind of feels like life these days. So I love her writing. It just seems like it's going to be the right book at the right time.
Now, the premise of this book sounds really appealing to me with the podcast angle and all that.
Yeah.
I could possibly give her another shot, depending on how you like it.
I was going to say, you can let me vet it for you since you didn't like Department of Speculation.
Yes, absolutely. That was Weather by Jenny Offel, coming out February 11th. My next book, and y'all, this is the last book that I have already read, is American Dirt by Janine Cummins. And I'm sure you've heard of this one. This book has been everywhere. And I actually thought about not even sharing it because you probably already know about it. The only reason I am going to share it is because I have already read it. And y'all, the hype is real, I think. So it's coming out January 21st. So you just have a couple more weeks. It's literary fiction. And the premise is when Lydia, who is an Acapulco bookstore owner, and that is a resort town in Mexico, by the way, if y'all have not heard of Acapulco. Her journalist husband writes an expose about Lydia's friend, Javier, who also happens to be the head of the Los Jardineros drug cartel. And Lydia does not know that Javier is the head of the cartel when they become friends. After her husband writes this expose, their lives completely explode. So some of the people that have loved this book are Mary Beth Keane, who was the author of Ask Again Yes, which I adored, Ann Patchett, who's one of my all-time favorite authors, Ann Bogle, and she shared it on a Patreon episode of One Great Book, and Tina from TBR, etc., who is one of my favorite bookstagrammers, loved it as well. And there's literally somebody new that has read and loved it popping up every day on Instagram. This is probably the most hyped book of 2020 at this point, and I rated it 5 stars. So as I said, I think the hype is real. And the beginning of the book will totally knock your socks off. It's a very explosive opening that will draw you in immediately. And after that, it's predominantly a harrowing journey type of story. And I didn't realize that was what this book was going to be about. And that type of book usually does not appeal to me, but I found this heart-stopping. I mean, I was up very late at night finishing the last however many pages I had to go. It is an issue book. And again, y'all know how I feel about those. We talked about it earlier. But I do feel like it's an issue book that is a fast-moving, riveting story. Janine Cummins humanizes the faceless mass of immigrants that you see on the news all the time. She really explains various reasons about why they are flocking to the U.S. And she gives them backstories, which I really liked. And not all of the backstories are the same. And she has gotten some criticism for not being an own voices author and this not being an own voices book. And y'all, if you have not heard of own voices, it just means a person that is a part of some type of group writing about that type of group. So for example, Janine Cummins is writing about Mexican migrants, and she is not herself Mexican, nor is she a migrant. So she's gotten a little bit of criticism for that. But and I'm not in a position to say whether she depicted this experience accurately or not. I know that I adored the book and it was a great story, but I'll have to leave that to others to comment on whether her portrayal was true to the actual experience. And don't skip the author's note. She talks about her personal story that inspired her to write the book. That's also kind of mind-blowing and has made me want to read a memoir she wrote prior to American Dirt's publication. This is another excellent book club pick.
It's so funny that you mentioned the beginning because my friend Pam at the university bookstore.
Yes. Whose recommendations I love.
I know. Well, and she recommended this book to me, but she was so upset because she had accidentally given it away after she was only through the first chapter. And she said to me, the opening, the beginning, she said, you can't believe it's so good. It's so strong. So she said exactly the same thing you did, that the beginning is just really intense.
And now she has to wait. That's brutal.
I know.
All right. So that was American Dirt by Janine Cummins. And that's coming out January 21st. And I am sure you will hear lots more about it. All right, Catherine, what's your next book?
Well, I'm going probably to the opposite side of the spectrum with something lighter that's likely to be quirky.
You might need this book after American Dirt.
Exactly. And it comes out in February. So after an intense January, you might be ready for this. It's called The House of Trelawney by Hannah Rothschild. I adored her debut, The Improbability of Love. Other people liked it, but they wasn't universally loved the way I felt it should be.
Is Hannah Rothschild of the Rothschild family?
There is a connection.
Okay.
Yeah. But in the Improbability of Love, one of the premises was she had an inanimate object as one of the narrators.
Oh.
And I just thought it was so clever.
Oh, I remember that book.
Right. And you may really disliked it. It was a painting.
Yep. I remember that. Okay.
And it was very sarcastic and very funny. So aside from really liking her writing, House of Trelawney has other elements that attract me. One being English aristocracy, quirky characters, and family dysfunction. That drew me in. And even better, it's four women from the family that are at the novel's center and are its narrators. So it's 2008. They own this massive castle in Cornwall. There are two generations of family living there, but the money's all gone. More family is showing up. So I feel like this will be a breaking the doldrums of winter when I'm living in the, what do they call it? The Arctic zone. And the temperatures are below zero. I'm going to need light and fun. It's House of Trelawney by Hannah Rothschild, and it comes out February 11th.
That does sound fun. And keep me posted on how that goes, because I might need to read that too. All right. My next book is a total 180. We're going to go to sports, one of my favorite things to read about in fiction. And this book is called The Cactus League by Emily Nemens. And it's coming out February 4th. It's literary fiction and it's a debut. I first heard about it on the Readerly Report podcast, which is hosted by Gail Weiswasser and Nicole Bonilla. And they had J. Ryan Straddle, the author of Kitchens of the Great Midwest and The Lager Queen of Minnesota, on. And he was talking about this book.
Love him.
And it totally sounded up my alley. So I went and grabbed it. It's about baseball. Jason Goodyear, who is a star baseball player, is at spring training, and despite outwardly having everything he could ever ask for, his life is kind of falling apart, and everyone around him is trying to get to the bottom of the situation and figure out why this guy is starting to crumble. The author is also the editor of the Paris Review, if that makes a difference for you. I don't really care one way or the other about that, but thought it was interesting. And I love my sports fiction, y'all know that, especially fiction that gets into the psychology of sports. While baseball is not my favorite sport, I have loved novels that are about baseball in the past, like The Art of Fielding by Chad Harbach.
Oh, that was so good.
So good. And where is he, by the way?
I was just about to say, we're waiting.
I know. Y'all, The Art of Fielding was Chad Harbach's debut novel, and it's been a long time, and we have heard nothing from him. Although I did read that it took him like over 10 years to write The Art of Fielding, so maybe that's just his deal.
Oh, okay.
And the other one I liked was Evie Drake Starts Over, which was a 180 from The Art of Fielding, but also involved kind of sports psychology and baseball. But anyway, I did read on Goodreads that you don't have to like baseball to like this book. It's sort of the setting of it, but there's a lot more to it than just baseball. So don't let that scare you away. And I also read that the structure is kind of unique for this one. It is kind of like deeply entwined short stories. And each story focuses on a different person that surrounds Jason Goodyear. So like one is about his batting coach and one is about kind of a floozy fling he had. And one is about a sports agent. I like that, I think, depending on how it plays out. And there were only three reviews on Goodreads. So this is kind of an under-the-radar pick, but they were all really good. So I'm looking forward to it. And that is The Cactus League by Emily Nemens, coming out February 4th.
Well, my next book could be right up your alley because I'm going to use a title, Swans of Fifth Avenue.
Ha ha ha, that'll get me.
That draws both our attentions. It's The Lost Diary of M by Paul Wolf, and it combines another three things I love: wealthy people behaving badly, real history, and just a hint of conspiracy theory.
Ooh.
It's about John F. Kennedy Jr. and one of his mistresses. And no, the M does not stand for Marilyn. It's Mary Meyer, who was a real socialite living ahead of her time in that she was married to a CIA chief, tried LSD with Timothy Leary, was Ben Bradley's sister-in-law, and a feminist And this is all in the 50s and 60s. So none of this is considered proper behavior. In real life, Meyer was killed less than a year after Kennedy's assassination, and the diary she kept has never been found. And at this point, my mind is racing because Marilyn Monroe also kept a diary that was never found.
So suspicious.
Exactly, right?
It's amazing how many dead people surround the Kennedys.
I know, that's true.
And I never get tired of Kennedy conspiracy theories, ever, ever, ever.
Me either. Well, in the lost diary of M, the diary's been found.
Oh.
So what is not to love about this? I'm thinking it's going to be dishy reading, and I cannot wait.
I really, really hope this is good. And I got the galley as soon as you told me about it.
Okay. Well, it's The Lost Diary of M by Paul Wolf, and it comes out February 25th.
And I think it'll be interesting, too, to see how a man writes a diary from the woman's perspective.
You know what, Sarah? That was my one hesitation with it when I saw it was written by a man. But then I thought, oh, come on. I didn't want to feel that way. I've read plenty of amazing books written by one gender in the voice of the other gender. So I'm hopeful.
All right. My next book is called Saint X by Alexis Shatkin, and that's coming out February 18th. It is fiction, and I can't quite tell whether it's going to be literary or lighter. So I'm just going to say fiction for now. I'll hopefully be able to clarify that for you once I read it. It's a debut, and this is a vacation book. It is about a family trip where they go to the Caribbean, and the Saint X is the name of a fictional Caribbean island. So think about it like Saint Lucia, something like that. Just so it's Saint X. The family's college-age daughter is murdered, and two local hotel employees are arrested, but they're soon released for lack of evidence. And then years later, the youngest sister, Claire, who was 7 at the time that her older sister was murdered in the Caribbean, embarks on a quest to find out the truth about what happened to her sister. Joyce Carol Oates called this part true crime thriller and part coming-of-age novel. That genre mashup really appeals to me.
Yes.
I've heard it is mostly about the aftermath, about how Claire and her family are impacted by her sister's murder, which ended up garnering national media's attention. So I'm also getting a little bit of like a Natalie Holloway vibe with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also heard that the beginning is really fast paced, but the story does slow down a little bit in the second half, and it goes to a place that you don't expect. And one Goodreads reviewer kind of mentioned Celeste Ng in that respect, like dealing with a death, but it's not a thriller. If you know what I mean.
Right.
Much like Everything I Never Told You. There's supposedly not very many likable characters. There are themes of class and race. Part of this takes place in New York City, and a knock on the book has been that those particular parts are a little bit too descriptive and they don't get to the heart of the story as quickly. So I'll be interested to see how that pans out. And also it's supposedly a good choice for book clubs.
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I think so. That is Saint X by Alexis Shatkin, coming out February 18th. And I hope I pronounced her name right. I did try to Google how to pronounce her name, and there was no audio online about how to say her name. So I hope I got that right. What's your next book?
Lily King, her debut novel, Euphoria, was a marvel to me. It was beautiful writing, a complex subject, and yet also had a twist that perfectly meshed with the story, didn't feel like she was trying too hard. And have you read it, Sarah, Euphoria?
I have not, but I do remember when it came out, seeing it around a lot of places.
Okay. Well, her new novel is called Writers and Lovers. It comes out March 3rd, and it has a similar sound to it or feeling to it, except that it's set in the late 1990s, whereas Euphoria was set in the 1930s. And this is about Casey, a woman in her early 30s whose mother has died suddenly, which kind of knocks her off her access. She quits her job, moves to Boston, and starts working as a waitress, all in the name of pursuing her passion, which is to write a novel. And my feeling is it's going to be a lot about that time in life when you think you should have things figured out, but you don't, where maybe all your friends are starting to buy homes, get married, and have kids.
The quarter life crisis.
Yeah.
And I love books about that time period, and I feel like it's an underrepresented time period in books.
I agree. I think it's one of the best sources of fiction because it goes so differently for everyone.
Yeah, and nonfiction too. I like From the Corner of the Oval, I felt was much about that time period.
Right.
And the memoir Out East by John Glenn was about that time period. And I loved both of those. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
I think it's a very interesting time in life. And I already know I love Lily King's writing. I feel like there's just so many stories that can be told. And that's Writers and Lovers. And it comes out March 3rd.
This premise from Lily King sounds much more interesting to me than the premise of Euphoria.
Right. That was an anthropologist and set in, I don't know, Papua New Guinea. I read it ages ago, but
that did not sound appealing to me. No. But maybe I'll give this one a try. My next two books, y'all, we're going real dark and twisted here. So buckle up. My next book is My Dark Vanessa by Kate Elizabeth Russell, and it's coming out March 10th. It's literary fiction, and it's a debut. So this is a Me Too book. And the premise is 17 years after a teenage Vanessa had an affair with her high school English teacher, and years later, she's approached by another student who is a student at the time, who is accusing that same English teacher of sexual abuse. And Vanessa must decide whether she's going to speak up or whether she's going to stay silent and move on with her life. Christina Arriola really liked this one. So did Jordan from Jordy's Book Club. And it's been blurbed by a trio of kind of different authors that sort of intrigues me. So Stephen King, Gillian Flynn, and Ellen Hildebrand, which to me are three pretty different authors. Maybe Gillian Flynn and Stephen King are a little bit more similar. And this is a book that HarperCollins has picked as like the book that this year they are going to throw marketing dollars at. So I hope that they picked right. I hope that it lives up to the hype. I don't normally read a book just for that reason, but other people whose recommendations I do trust, who I already mentioned, have read it and liked it. So that's why I'm picking it. So as I mentioned about this one and the next book I'm going to talk about, it's dark, it's twisted, it's unsettling, it's suspenseful, it's really hard to put down, and it's told in alternating timelines, both at the time of the affair when Vanessa was 17 and later in life when this other student is trying to get her to speak up. I do feel like there's been a little bit of a glut of Me Too books lately, and I worry that it's going to feel kind of warmed over, that we've heard this story before. But the reviews on Goodreads say that it doesn't feel that way. So I'm hopeful that they're right. And it does have a really high rating. The rating is a 4.49. And that's high for Goodreads. And I also think, like many of the other books we've talked about today, that it would be a great book club pick just based on the premise. So that is My Dark Vanessa by Kate Elizabeth Russell, coming out March 10th. What's your next pick?
I'm going back to, we mentioned Therese Ann Fowler earlier and her novel Z about Zelda Fitzgerald, which is fabulous. She is similar to Marie Benedict in that she writes historical fiction about famous women. But what caught my eye about her new novel, A Good Neighborhood, which comes out in March, is not only is it not historical, it's not about one woman. It's told from multiple viewpoints. So it's set in North Carolina and is about two families living in the same neighborhood. One is a single parent raising a biracial son, and the other is a conservative, kind of new money, entrepreneurial family. And the only thing they have in common is teenagers and a property line, and both get really messy. It's got subjects like racism and traditional values in modern day America, both of which are completely combustible. So that's A Good Neighborhood by Therese Ann Fowler, and it comes out March 10th.
And I co-signed this one. This is on my radar as well. All right, my next book, and I misspoke earlier. I said we had two. I had the next two books of mine were going to be dark and messed up, and I actually meant three. So this is the second of those. It is called Darling Rose Gold by Stephanie Robel. And it's coming out March 17th. It is a psychological thriller. Y'all know this is rare for me, but there's a particular reason this one sounds interesting to me. It's also a debut. And the premise is Rose Gold Watts believed she was ill her entire childhood until her mom went to prison for 5 years. And when she gets out of prison, Rose takes her mom back into her home. And that sets up sort of a showdown. Lisa Jewell and Wendy Walker have blurbed this book, and Chelsea at Suspense Thrill really liked it as well. Here's the reason it was appealing to me and why it stuck out amongst all of the psychological thrillers. It's based on a real life story, and the name of the person at the center of this is Dee Dee Blanchard. And I started to Google it, and then I saw some things and I was like, ooh, I don't want to know any more about this.
I wondered about that as you start explaining the synopsis. I haven't watched the HBO documentary, but I know about her story, the basics. So, okay, interesting.
So do I. So the HBO documentary that Catherine mentioned is called Mommy Dead and Dearest. So there's that. And I do know this entire thing involves Munchausen's by proxy syndrome. And that is a disorder where a caregiver fabricates illnesses for the person they're caring for. This was featured in another book I read in 2019. I'm not going to say which one it was because it would spoil the plot of that book. I don't think it spoils the plot of this book to say that this involves Munchausen's by proxy. Also, if you know anything about the Dee Dee Blanchard story, you know that that's what it involves. Again, I think it's going to be dark, creepy. Goodreads reviewers mentioned the word insane. And again, no likable characters. So if that bugs you, maybe stay away from this one. And that is Darling Rose Gold by Stephanie Roble, coming out March 17th. What's your next book?
Well, my next book is, I'm not going into dark thrillers, but it's probably the only true literary fiction on my list. But what drew me in is its debut, and it's set in an area of the world that I'm particularly fascinated by. And what intrigued me is I watched the Ken Burns documentary about the Vietnam War, which is absolutely outstanding and you should watch it. And beyond being stunned, which I know I'm naive, about how our government lied to us for decades about its involvement with the country, I was struck by the country's history and its people. And I have always loved Southeast Asian fiction. So when I saw this family saga set in Vietnam during the time period of the war, I knew I had to read it. The book is called The Mountains Sing, and it's by Quê Nguyen, which I'm sorry if I massacred that, but hopefully I didn't. She's a well-known Vietnamese poet, and this is her first novel. It's a multi-generational story beginning with a mother and her six children fleeing their family's farm in the 1920s when communism first begins taking hold in North Vietnam. From there, the novel moves to Hanoi, and the focus is on the woman's granddaughter. She's now old enough to watch her family grapple with the oncoming war and how they're going to respond. It just sounds like the kind of thing I really enjoy reading. And last year, I read another beautiful book called On Earth, We're All Gorgeous.
Oh, On Earth, We're Briefly Gorgeous.
We're Briefly Gorgeous, yes. That was also it was a debut novel by a very well-known Vietnamese poet. And the writing, it was just so absolutely stunning that it makes me feel really optimistic about this book.
On Earth, We're Briefly Gorgeous has been on a ton of best books of 19 lists. Yeah,
it has, which I loved the writing, but the way the book went, it was not for everyone. It won't be on my best of list. It was not easy to read and follow. Hopefully this will be, and it's The Mountains Sing, and it comes out March 17th.
I'll be interested to hear how that goes. Last books. My last book is The Familiar Dark by Amy Engel, coming out March 31st. I think Edelweiss has this listed as literary fiction, but based on her last book, I would say it's more commercial fiction slash maybe even a little thrillery element. The premise sounds completely boring and not original at all, which is...
Okay. Boy, you're selling this.
I really am selling this. I'll tell you in a minute why I'm still excited about it, though. So it takes place in the Missouri Ozarks, and a woman named Eve finds her daughter murdered on the playground. She sets out to discover the truth about what happened. So that's the premise. Boring, right? Done a million times, right? Amy Engel wrote the book The Roanoke Girls, which is quite possibly the most dark and twisted family drama I've read in recent memory. And I have a feeling, or I'm trusting her, I guess is a better term, to do something with this boring premise that makes it original based on what she did with the Roanoke Girls. It is a small town with secrets kind of story, and it's the type of town that really doesn't have much to be hopeful about. And I did also read that Eve is a really strong female character and that the book also deals with family bonds, which the Roanoke Girls too dealt with family stuff. That is The Familiar Dark by Amy Engel, coming out March 31st. And that concludes my run of very dark and twisted books.
You have a lot of thrillers. That's kind of interesting.
I don't know. I feel like I wouldn't categorize a lot of these as thrillers, though.
Right.
I mean, they're definitely dark and twisted, but they don't feel like a regular thriller.
Right.
I may be wrong. We'll see what happens when I read them. All right, Catherine, share your last book, which I am also extremely excited about and can co-sign. So tell me about it.
Well, Emily St. John Mandel's post-apocalyptic novel, Station 11, is still one of the best, most realistic dystopian novels I've ever read. And I think a lot of people feel that way because it pops up on best of lists everywhere. I went on to read her other books, and in every one, her writing pulls you in, and there's always an ingenious twist. Things don't go as you think they're going to go, which I love that kind of surprise. On March 24th, her new novel, The Glass Hotel, comes out, and it's already getting a lot of buzz. I'm intrigued, but I'm nervous because the synopsis sounds really bizarre. It sounds almost like a bad joke. A bartender, a hotel owner, an artist, and a Ponzi scheme all collide. Then one of them disappears.
That sounds like a lot.
I know, right? And so, yeah, there are people appearing in lives. There's a lot of questions. The one thing that is reassuring to me is that much like Station 11, the themes seem to be connection, consequences, the planet, societal values, and what happens next. My hope is that it's the same kind of fiction as Station 11, a plot that keeps you glued to the pages, but with literary fiction attention paid to the characters. I'm hopeful she can pull that off. I think if she does, it's going to be amazing reading, but it does sound like a lot of plot. So I'm a little bit skeptical, but that's The Glass Hotel, and it comes out March 24th.
At least she's somebody we can trust, or hope we can trust, to deal with this crazy plot, right?
Right, right. That's exactly why I kept it on my list, because, yeah, I do trust her.
I don't care what her next book is about. I will read it.
Exactly.
After Station 11. Yeah.
Right.
All right. It is time for us to each pick our number one book that we are excited about for winter 2020. I have a really hard time picking one book for this year because, as I mentioned, so far it's been an awesome year. And I'm going to do this by mentioning two that I've already read, but then picking the one book I have not yet read, but I'm the most excited about. So the two that I'm most excited about that I've already read, you can probably all guess, it's going to be We Wish You Luck and American Dirt. And maybe a slight edge to We Wish You Luck because it came so out of the blue for me, which kind of makes it even that more much more exciting. But the book I'm most excited about is actually one Catherine shared, The Glass Hotel by Emily St. John Mandel. Is that cheating? Can I do that? Can I pick one of your books as my favorite?
You can do whatever you want. It's your podcast. Because I didn't pick it. So you can absolutely, you can have it.
Okay. What are you most excited about?
Well, after the Louise Penny debacle of my summer picks, when I raved and enthused about how excited I was about her next novel, and then I ended up really, really not liking it, which I am very sorry to all Louise Penny lovers, because I am one as well. And if you're listening, I apologize, but boy, I did not like A Better Man. It's making me a little hesitant. So I'm going to hang back a bit and choose The Lost Diary of M, because I don't know the author. And I have limited expectations. I just think it's going to be juicy. And with the holidays being over and it's too cold to go outside, I'm looking for something to entertain me. So I think I'm going to be more realistic with the thing I'm most looking forward to.
I like it. All right. Catherine, thank you as always.
Oh, it was so great to talk to you.
As always, y'all, we'll have links to all these books in the show notes. I know we talked about a lot. And also stay tuned tomorrow for my most anticipated books of winter blog post, which will contain some of the books I talked about today, but also it will include some books I did not talk about today. And I will also update you on any books I talked about today, but got a chance to read between recording date and airing date. Next week, we'll have the first mini episode of 2020, and it will feature one of our podcast patrons, Brittany Block. And she's our first guest living outside of the U.S. She is in the military and she's stationed in Germany. And we will also be talking a little bit about the logistics of reading abroad. Talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. You can find show notes with all the books mentioned in the episode, purchase links, and linked timestamps at www.sarahsbookshelves.com/podcast. And that's Sarah with an H. I'd love to hear your comments, feedback, and suggestions. You can find me online on my blog, sarahsbookshelves.com, on Twitter at Sarah's Shelves, on Instagram at Sarah's Bookshelves, and via email at sarahsbookshelves@gmail.com. And if you'd like to get exclusive bonus episodes of the podcast, you can support us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/sarahsbookshelves. And there's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio to my Patreon page. Thanks for listening.